I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Not if Donald Trump has something to say about it. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and we answered the call. Each week, myself and Will be joined by guests to discuss movies, television, popular culture, and anything else we fucking feel like talking about. How you doing, Will?
I did something antiquated for people of our generation.
Butter?
Yes, I was churning butter all afternoon. No, I bought something called, I think it's a compact disc today. Is that what a CD? Is that what that's?
It's a bank instrument for saving money.
Yes. My fucking iPod, you know me, I don't understand anything about technology. My iPod, all my music got erased from it somehow. From my iTunes, I pushed a button, and it must have been the purge button, if that's such a
thing.
There
is no purge button. I don't know what you did.
I don't know what I did.
You know what you did? You touched Siri in a very uncomfortable place.
I can't get anything, and I really wanted to hear the new Regina Spektor album, which came out today. So I said, well, I'm done. Rather than say I give up on music altogether and I'll never listen to music again, I decided to go buy a CD. So I did that.
Where,
so that was my day.
Where on earth did you buy this CD?
There's a store called Best Buy.
Ah, a dying breed.
Yes.
Yes.
So I did this, and now I have only one Regina Spektor album that I will listen to over and over and over.
I have a huge collection of CDs back from the day when, you know, we would collect such physical artifacts. But I have this weird habit that I will still purchase every new Bruce Springsteen CD in hard copy. I like having the booklet. I like having the physical Bruce CD.
Well, I don't know why that is. I own
the
CD. I could look at Regina Spektor's face. She's got a nice face.
You do realize you have the internet on your phone, and you can look at a lot more than her face on there.
Maybe, no, there's not more than a face on there.
Believe me, you're not using toilet time correctly.
The point being, There is no point. I bought a CD. That's how I'm doing today. Everybody's thrilled. I didn't give up on music after all. Andrea Marchant will be pleased to know that. So what's going on? What do you got to tell our listeners?
What I've told listeners, once again, thank you for all the continued support, the Facebook likes, the Twitter follows. Do need you to step it up a little bit. Judd Apatow has not yet contacted us, so you got to keep tweeting at him. I'm not letting up on this. I want the Lena Dunham email to come.
He asked for new podcasts
on
Twitter.
He's asking for it.
So
there you go. So other than that, everything is going well. Myself and Will, we're going to be getting some business cards soon, getting very high tech. So we'll have those two.
It'll all come together with the business card.
That's it. That's the last piece to this whole empire is the business card. Until that point, it's just been nothing but slipshod work. But yeah, just want to thank everyone again. Tell your friends. Tell them to listen. You tell us you enjoy it. Great. Wonderful. Now turn around and tell the person you're sitting next to give us a listen, because that's the only way this thing is going to grow beyond this little narcissistic circle of friends that we've accumulated.
Who's our sponsor this week?
Our sponsor today. I'm glad you asked.
Because there was a chance I wasn't going to.
You never know with you. If you're anything like me, then you too hate working out. But how else do you achieve that fit, toned look without the hassle, expense, and exertion of attending the gym? Well, what if I told you that you can have the chiseled cut body of a Spartan warrior while never leaving the comfort of your own couch? Well, you can with Muscle Mist. How does it work, you ask? Simple. First, find a comfortable place to sit your pasty, doughy ass. Then, using the spray bottle delivery system, just spritz a few bursts of Muscle Mist into your immediate environment. Place the rubberized biting stick between your teeth and slip the padded gloves over your hands. In less than 60 seconds, the Muscle Mist will penetrate deep into your nervous system, causing violent spasms. After a mere 15 minutes of racking and heaving, you will have received a full body workout. You'll never have to step foot into the gym ever again, thanks to the neurotoxic goodness of Muscle Mist.
You know, I have never worked out a day in my life.
Really?
Which explains this fantastic body I have.
Well, I'll get you some Muscle Mist, and you can work out while watching Yankees games.
I think I've stated on the show before, I have the body of like a 1940s like character actor or something like that. Like I have like, I could be like, I don't know.
Like Eugene Plachette?
Yeah. on today's show, we're going to be discussing a great many things as per usual. Kevin Smith has a new project, a movie review show of sorts. A comic book character is going to be coming out of the closet. Who's it going to be? And I'm going to go off on things that are annoying me with these television shows where people sing. Again, music. I'm anti-music today. Fuck music. That's what I have to say. And who is our guest today?
Our guest today is Barry Wernick. Barry, how are you? Barry is a writer, screenwriter, television writer. He wrote the classic comedy Grandma's Boy. which is beloved by generations of video game playing stoners.
One generation.
Well,
I
just
think.
One generation. Well, it's almost up to the second generation.
A very inarticulate generation. At least when they talk to me.
As long as this generation isn't too stoned enough to remember to show it to the next generation.
You're right.
Fine.
They should pass it on.
It's the kind of movie that their kids are going to be like, Dad, what's this? Oh, yeah, that's a good movie. Barry, you also wrote on the television show Rules of Engagement with David Spade.
Yeah, me and David wrote together. No.
You and David wrote together?
No.
Wrote on each other?
He's fantastic.
Excellent. I saw him once at the Grove with a ridiculously tall blonde woman.
Just one?
Just one that day.
He travels in...
He in packs?
In packs, yes. I've seen him out with several. Well, he's, three.
He's living the life. Then.
He has a great life. He really has a, you know, he's exactly like the character he plays on the show, but
and yet
not
that attractive.
Not an asshole, actually. Very nice guy.
Interesting.
Well, let's take things back. This is usually what you do. Let's take things back a bit.
My conceptual approach to conversation.
And go with your origin story, so to speak.
My origin story?
So what got you your start in the whole writing game?
In the whole writing game.
This racket we call the game of words.
I grew up, I think my first encounter with comedy that really changed my life was Steve Martin. 1978, 77.
Really awkward
albums.
Experience in the bathroom at the Shrine Auditorium during the Oscars one year.
Oh, I would give so much money to have an awkward moment with Steve Martin.
He played your banjo.
I did once urinate next to Robert Preston from The Music Man.
I don't know what that is.
He was the star of The Music Man.
Music Man.
He was the Oscars, and he was at the urinal next to me. And,
okay. But was he older?
Yes,
he was emptying his colostomy bag.
He was there for, I think it was for Victor Victoria. It was like 1982. That was when I got the great fortune of attending to the Oscars.
I once urinated next to Ed Koch, former mayor of New York.
How was he doing?
I wanted to say that. I was also afraid, though, if I said, because you know Ed Koch is supposedly a gay man. So I was afraid if I made too much bathroom interaction in my show, I'm like,
all of a sudden you'd
him.
Be an Iowa, yeah. an Iowa senator.
Yeah, your stance might be too wide.
I was urinated next to Giovanni Ribisi. Sorry, I had to get that in there.
But Sean, let the man explain about Steve Martin.
No, he was great. I did a stand up for the talent show, and it was basically a complete lift of Steve Martin's routine. You know, knowing full well the audience wouldn't know better.
Yeah.
And I do original stuff now.
Yeah. It's not a while. Instead of an arrow, you come with a tomahawk over your head.
Yeah.
He dropped that.
He's not doing it anymore. Anybody?
I think we've actually discussed this before. I have an almost identical story. I was nine years old. My grandparents took me to this little resort near here, Highland Springs, and they had a talent show at the end of the week. And I don't have any fucking talent.
Right.
So I got up there, and the one thing I knew how to do was I knew the entire Jackie Mason live on Broadway by heart.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what any of the jokes meant. I just had memorized the intonation, the delivery. So I got up there in front of my fellow 9-year-olds and started doing some Jackie Mason. I went out with a girl. She wanted to go out, so I let her go out. Why do I need to go out if she? Why do I have to go out if she wants to go out? I can stay in. And all the parents are losing their shit, and the kids are just giving these little stony face stares. So, but I know what you mean by falling in love with a stand-up comedian and learning their entire bit by heart.
Oh yeah, yeah,
being
absolutely,
by
just
it.
Obsessing over it. Yeah.
And you also, like myself, are a Berkeley graduate.
Yes.
Yeah, go Bears.
I did graduate. It was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Go
okay,
Bears,
so then,
yes.
So, okay, but from liking Steve Martin's comedy to deciding, okay, I want to try my hand at this and writing something funny. Did you do any writing in college or any writing when you were in high school?
Yeah, in college, my friends and I revived the humor magazine.
The Squelch?
No, the Pelican, had a long... venerable history, and an office in the student center. So if you had claimed you were picking up the mantle of the newspaper, you got a free office.
That's awesome.
It's the building where people jumped off of, killed themselves.
Well, there were a few of those in Berkeley.
Yes. and what was great about doing the Pelican, other than how fun it was, at graduation, our speaker... classy move on Berkeley, getting us a guy who didn't even graduate, who dropped out of Berkeley, and he was a journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle. And he said, Yes, when I was in college, I wrote on the now defunct Pelican. It's not defunct.
It's refunct.
Really? Funked you.
Go funk yourself.
So you started writing on that.
I did that in college. Then I went to law school.
Oh, so that's a big diversion.
That was
yes. That's what an English major does.
That's where I got all my great comedy skills.
Nothing funnier than lawyers.
No, they're fantastic. No, you know what's funnier than lawyers? Law students who think they have a bright future. That's pretty funny.
So did you just realize, I don't have a bright future as a lawyer. I better get into the job of writing because everyone makes it as a writer.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, though. Seriously. Law is not a stable career anymore.
No, it's not.
It's completely falling apart. There's jobs gone that'll never come back. So I maintain that a job that will, you know, a career that will provide no security is a fine career.
Well, I have a lot of friends who graduate law school and are hard-pressed to find a job. The ones they can find, they're earning a third of what they would have earned 15 years ago in the same position.
So what was your first, then, professional writing?
The first thing I got paid for, which, you know, I tried to bury this, but here it comes out. No, a friend of mine from law school had this advertising company on the side. They advertised like 976 numbers, remember
Excellent.
Those 976, and things like that. So he wanted to do an infomercial, and it would be an infomercial that you could sell it to anybody, you know, who had a product, and it would just like be this generic infomercial that you could
just plug in any product.
Yeah, basically. Well, it was a dating thing. That's what it was. But anybody could air it in their, you know, and say it was from them. And it starred Bob Eubanks, the noted anti-Semite from Roger and Me. And I wrote it, and you know, and it was all like, pretend this is spontaneous conversation. It was all scripted, just like reality TV today. I was a pioneer.
You were a pioneer. There would be no Kardashians if not for you.
That's
Thank
right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You say that sarcastically, but you're welcome. I think you are happy.
As
to
long
have...
as we still have the Kardashian sex tape.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What? No? All right. We'll put a link on the Facebook page to it. Okay, so let's talk about Grandma's Boy.
Sure.
Yeah, how did this come about?
Grandma's Boy came about. How did it start?
I'm going to assume a lot of weed
it
in video
started,
games.
No, I have to, I'll be honest. I wrote a movie that was basically PG-13, and the gang over at Happy Madison, Alan Covert, Nick Schwartzen, you know, the guys who really spearheaded it, they wanted to turn it into a hard R. And so they added, there was a little weed humor. In particular, the standard, you got to get the old grannies high.
Of course.
At least we did it with tea instead of a bong.
It's more organic that way. It fits into the story.
Yeah, you know, it's more grounded.
Uh-huh. Well.
I knew Covert was looking for his own project.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this idea, and I pitched it to him. And he's like, yeah. That was his big reaction, and then I got to write the script. And in a way, it's very personal because it was very much inspired by my grandmother, and the idea of how you can be really close to your grandparents in a way that you can't have that relationship with your parents.
Right. It's and, almost that generational distance almost
right.
can be bridged as well.
So in that movie, the parents aren't. I think the father has one quick. Half a scene, and they don't
exist.
And
then there's the mother that he, his friend's mother he jerks off on.
Yes, so the surrogate well. Mother.
It's funny because I was going to ask you if you ever lived with your grandmother, if stuff did come from your actual...
No, it wasn't. sorry to disappoint you. No, but I did live with Shirley Jones very briefly during a very bad time in her life. And Marty Engels was there too.
And quite frankly, Shirley Jones, she seems game for anything.
Yeah, she was. Well, you
she's
know,
fantastic in the movie.
She's always had kind of this raunchy side to her, which I guess explains her.
It's like Betty White before Betty White blew up again.
Yeah, exactly. Now, she's always been a very dirty bird.
You know, now, just for people who might not have seen the film, Right. Grandma's Boy, do you want to tell him?
Grandma's Boy is the tale of a young lad on the cusp of adulthood who works as a video game tester.
As a 35-year-old.
35-year-old video game tester, and through a series of misfortunes ends up homeless and has to move in with his grandmother.
Yeah.
And has to overcome a series of trials and tribulations to win the girl, design the video game, and...
Become a man.
And become a man and grow up.
It really was.
Now, I actually hadn't seen the film until recently. I knew you were coming on the show, and I said, well, let me go out and see this film. And it's funny, because the film, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. But it's about two things that are so far out of my life. One, video games. I don't play video games. I did when I was younger, and I'm aware of them in reality. And weed. I've never smoked pot in my life. I'm a 32-year-old man. I've never smoked pot.
Is he staying for the rest of this conversation?
Unfortunately, he's part of the show.
I've just never done this. So it's like, it's a foreign world.
Well, you're in luck, my friend.
It was like watching a separation.
Here's a brownie for you.
Ah, well, there you go. If I ever did get high, it would be...
We'll just put that in air quotes.
It would be for the Will Sean podcast. It would be for a special podcast.
And if I ever drank laudanum, it would be for the Will Sean podcast.
You know what it was? You know why I never did? Because the kids in high school, all the songs, they pissed me off. And I was friends with some of them, but they would always be like, they'd smoke, and then they'd be like, oh, this table, feel this table. I'm like, oh, you're not in fucking Dazed and Confused. You're not as high as you think you are, and you annoy me. So, but at least these guys, they just get high and play video games. They're not annoying like those.
I think I was like you. I rebelled against rebellion growing up.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Malibu. Junior high school was just, everybody was a stoner surfer.
Nice.
But very industrious. I mean, they were getting up at like 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, to go
surf. They went surfing. Sure, they were high when they were doing it, but I wasn't getting up that early. I just drank soda.
That's it.
But those guys are probably still... Are they still out there on the beach, and you're writing about them?
No, you know what? I think what happens is then they grow up and become super successful after you spent a whole childhood going, you'll see when you grow up, you won't amount to anything. You'll never earn more than $25,000 a year. Remember that in broadcast news?
Oh, that's right.
It was the biggest laugh for me in that movie.
That's right. I haven't seen that movie in years.
It's 25, great film. All right.
A couple of other things from Grandma's Boy.
Yeah.
When Jonah Hill was sucking on that tit in Grand, there's a scene where Jonah Hill is sucking on a tit for like days.
Yeah.
Sucking on the tit.
Yeah.
Did you look at that and be like, future Oscar nominated actor?
That's right. Well, here's a little bit of trivia. He played the character of Barry, named after me. I didn't give him that name, but it was one of his first roles.
Yeah, it took me a little while to realize, holy shit, that's Jonah Hill. He was so doughy-faced, you know. Now we're used to seeing him as this chiseled piece of, you know, flesh. But back in the day, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Jonah Hill was rotund.
Now, after Grandma's Boy, you started doing a lot of television, or you had done television.
I'd done television. I did Grandma's Boy, and then I did more TV.
And the show you most recently worked on was Rules of Engagement?
Yeah.
Yep. And that actually kind of gets us into a segue to something we wanted to talk about. Community?
Yes.
Okay. So we actually had a few questions for, you know, the show Community, which you said you don't necessarily watch. But recently there was
seen a little.
There was a shakeup in the show. They got renewed for another season. But Dan Harmon, who is the showrunner, was ousted from the show. He's essentially, in his words, he was fired.
Yeah.
And having worked in a TV writer's room, can you kind of explain, what does a showrunner do? Like, is removing a showrunner going to derail the comedy? Is it going to change the tone? How much involvement does this person have on the vision and direction of a show?
The showrunner is basically a business person who runs a small multi-million-dollar business.
Okay.
And that's the big problem, because showrunners are writers. And
they tend to be first and foremost writers that get promoted.
They are.
To showrunner.
Oh, you're the lead writer when you're a showrunner. You're in charge of everything. We can go through that bit by bit if you like. But basically, they're writers who work their way up. Usually, they've created the show, and if they're experienced, they get to be the showrunner. And think about writers. Think about comedy writers. We're not that pleasant, despite all appearances right now. A surly, immature bunch is untruthful way. What happens is these people get to the position of power, and most of them can't handle it.
Completely
they're not,
unequipped.
They have no people skills, which is why you go into writing to begin with, and then suddenly you need to have people skills, and I think it brings out a lot of the infantile side of people. And there are good showrunners, so I don't want to malign all of them, just most.
Gotcha. So they're the person, then they act as the liaison between the writers, the actual production producers who are physically putting the show together,
mm-hmm.
network executives, the studio. So they have to be the face of the writers' room to all these other people that are coming together to make the show.
They're not just the face of the writers' room. I mean, they're the lead writer. They're the decision maker. They're going to be writing a lot, and they're going to be shaping the show that way. But, you know, in TV, in multi-camera TV, I should just differentiate. Multi-cameras like Two and a Half Men, that sort of stagey play version that we're all used to with the laugh track.
It's everything on CBS. As opposed to everything on NBC.
On NBC, all the single-camera shows, which they just ordered a ton of. Single-camera being like a movie.
It's been working so well for them all these years. Ratings through the roof. Let's get another batch.
Expensive. Yeah. I mean, the reason they wouldn't do them for so many years is because the business model for them is terrible. They don't know how they make money. They just cost so much money.
It's called the Olympics. Every 4 years, this golden goose comes and lays a magic egg on NBC, keeps them floating for another 3.5 years.
So when you're in this writer's room, though, yeah. I mean, is it like, is everybody just throwing out ideas? Like, what's the structure of that like? I mean,
it's completely unstructured.
Okay,
you sit around a table like we're doing right now, and usually it starts with how's your bagel, moves into what happened last night, you know, what'd you do, what's your life? Oh, that would be an interesting, what if so-and-so did something like that? And that's usually how it starts, and then you start fleshing out the story. And then there are times where you're just sitting there going, okay, we need a story for Jeff.
Fuck, there's a deadline coming up.
Well, there's that, and there's just you force a story in there, and sometimes they're okay.
Okay, and then you guys, as a group, come up with the three-act story, and then someone gets assigned to actually take the notes, take everything that's come together in the room, and put this into an actual script.
I'll tell you exactly how it worked on Rules, and I think it's kind of standard with some exceptions that I can tell you about. But so this is multi-camera. This is opposed to Community, which is single camera, and I have to say I don't know how they ran their writer's room, although I hear into the ground. But what would happen is, so we start talking about ideas as a group, and then what's called beating out the story, which is just, you know, in this scene, we need to have a scene where they have a talk in the proverbial coffee place, or,
exactly.
We'll start in the proverbial diner, and so we have that beat sheet, and then we fill it out more as an outline. You turn that into the network. They have to give you notes and approve it, and then you go back and we do a very detailed outline that we send the writer off to write, and they get a week and come back, and then we rewrite it as a group, as a room. Now, there are rooms like the way Chuck Lorre does it on Two and a Half Men.
Chaim Levine,
that's right. And other shows do this too. They just write everything as a group at the table. Okay. And you need a very strong captain of that ship to do that.
Because it can easily just derail into a million different ideas.
Because otherwise it's too many cooks.
Yeah. And part of his philosophy is, you send a writer off to do one or two drafts. They come back, you tear it apart, you start hopefully not from scratch, but you're doing a lot of work, and it's no reflection on the writer. It has everything to do with, this is such a fluid, the show you shoot is basically the script, wherever the script is
on
that
day. Of
day.
Shooting.
It's exactly right. We're putting on a play a week, and you roll into, writing a new play every week.
I worked in development for a little while years ago, and I always said that the problem with development is you could take the best script in the world. You take The Godfather, you get five guys, you get pizza and soda, put them in a room with a script of The Godfather or Chinatown, and they will rip it apart and find a million problems with it. No written piece of work, especially a script, is bulletproof. And if you want to find a problem, if you want to find something that doesn't work, you want to pitch an alternate idea, you will find a way to derail something that's otherwise good.
I've taken so many meetings with development people over the years, and it's like, if they don't find a problem, then they don't have a job.
Yeah.
So they have to find problems in perfection, which is why they never bought any of my scripts.
They also need their out when their boss says, why didn't this work? Hey, I gave them the notes.
I told them to make all the characters that were Asian black, but they... I actually once got a note that we had these Russian villains in a script of ours, and they told us, can we change the Russian gangsters to black gangsters so we can cast like Ludacris. So we went back and we virtually didn't change a thing in the script, just went back and changed all the dialogue to some sort of like, and I'm just some like white guy from Long Island, like, how would black person?
You did it all wrong. You put too much work into it. All you do is in the character description you say, a black man, you know, that's it. You erase the Russian word and you put in black, and then they go, oh, they took our note.
Well, these are the tricks. These are the secrets from an experienced writer.
I shouldn't be revealing this to all our development execs.
Well, listen, we're going to move along to the topics of the week now. And Kevin Smith, speaking of writers.
Yeah. Former film director, now just all around.
Now he just all
around. He just taught all around, round podcast kingpin and empire builder. Kevin Smith, if you're listening, we'd love to be on the Smodcast Network.
But he has started a movie review show that's going to be on Hulu called Spoilers. And they're going to take 10...
Don't tell me about it.
I know. Well, spoiler alert. Spoilers is about they take 10... film fans, like just schlubby guys that like Kevin Smith probably picked up at some mall in Paramus.
We've been to a taping of Hollywood Babylon. We've seen what his people are like.
Well, he gets 10 of them.
Yeah.
And he brings them to a new summer film each weekend on opening day, and then they discuss it. Because there are no film criticism shows anymore. God forbid they have actual critics on TV talking about...
No.
I mean, what is this going to be? What is this show going to be?
It's going to be... You know what it's going to be? It's going to be a bunch of film geeks giving knee-jerk reactions on movies that no one else has seen yet.
So and us.
Exactly, but televised. And the problem with that is that there's no context. There's no thought process involved. It's just Kevin Smith moderating barely controlled chaos, you know?
But
I long for the days of who do they have replace Ebert and Roper with?
They replaced Ebert and Roper first with A.O. Scott and Michael Phillips.
Yeah.
Then they brought in
Ben Lyons.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that was a nightmare. And then PBS did a show with Christy Lemire, who I like, and Ignati Vishnevetsky.
And don't forget Lights, Camera, Jackson.
And this kid. Oh, wow. You ever see this kid?
No.
But I would watch. There's this kid, Lights, Camera, Jackson. He's like a 12-year-old kid. And he's like, Midnight in Paris was my first Woody Allen movie. Like, gee whiz. He's I didn't get some of the references, but...
He's a really bright kid. He started out with just a film website reviewing PG-13, you know, movies PG-13 and below. And he's very photogenic. He's good on camera. And I don't know how he got involved with this, but they would do little segments of him from his parents' home in New Jersey. And he'd be recording segments. And he's a smart little kid. He's got a good career. So Lights, Camera, Jackson, that's his nom de review.
We want him on the show so I could curse a lot in front of a
Is
child.
Is he on those print ads? Fantastic.
I don't know.
Totally radical, says kid in New Jersey.
Well, he's not allowed to review rated R movies, so it makes for a very interesting dynamic. But you know.
I want him to review like whatever like the next like David Lynch movie.
No, Fifty Shades of Grey, when that comes out.
When that comes out. But you know, I guess the whole thing with the Kevin Smith thing is I probably would like – I like Kevin Smith's humor. I like all these idiots that he hangs around with. Like, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing what Jason Mewes thinks of Snow White and the Huntsman. But the problem is – that has been a void in actual televised film criticism. And maybe I'm the only one who gives a shit about this, but like I loved Ebert, and I know he can't talk, which kind of impedes
doesn't stop Stephen Hawking. Come on,
I know.
Bullshit.
You know what? I guess that's what's bugging me.
He's got an arm. He got a hand. He can type. Come on, Ebert. Let's get
Does
on.
Does anybody
it.
Have any more thoughts about
that? About that? Well, I think first of all, isn't it Ain't It Cool News on TV? Isn't that basically what
I
it
guess
is?
It is
because it's a film geeks. just talking about, you know, the whole idea behind that is, you know, I don't need to criticize as much as
you
love
can just
it.
Be Harry Knowles and write 15,000-word yeah. reviews about how every movie he sees is a dream come true for him and has to go all the way from ad ovum, from the egg of the first time he ever saw a flickering image. Every review of Harry Knowles starts with the first time he ever saw a movie and then has to go into his dead mother and then how this character, this comic book, or this creature, whatever, influenced him and inspired him and how he... And then he gives an unabashedly positive review that overlooks any faults in the film. See the Green Lantern review.
But what you just said, it's interesting because this Kevin Smith show is clearly for geeks, I guess. But I don't need to hear the – me and my film geek friends are going to go see Prometheus, and we're going to have the exact same conversation afterwards that these assholes are going to have. Yeah. So what's the point? It's all masturbation. Speaking
– What if you have no – what if you're a lonely asshole? You have no asshole friends. You have now –
Which
– Now you have your computer.
With the internet, you're never lonely.
No, but you know what? He's got a point because I bet you a lot of – there's a lot of acne face. Kevin Smith-sized people who don't have friends, and they sit next to me in the theater, and they smell, and they eat.
They don't sit next to you on Southwest Airlines, evidently.
moving on.
No,
fresh material, Barry.
No, they fly Virgin appropriately.
Okay,
yeah,
moving on.
That's right.
Okay, so recently, X-Men. There's a character in X-Men North Star.
X-Men, the famous Marvel comic book series.
Yes.
About a group of mutant superheroes.
And North Star, apparently he's been gay for years, but he's finally getting gay married in the comic strip. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not really that familiar with this character, but not to be outdone, DC said to Marvel, well,
we'll see your North Star raise you a South Pole.
Well, they said that... there is a DC character, which they said is a prominent character, that is going to come out of the closet in June. Who is it?
I got this one.
You got it?
It's Green Lantern.
Really?
Oh.
He wears a ring. He wears that ring.
I thought it was...
And look, I mean, it's like a ramrod. It can make your dreams come true.
Green Lantern, I was... all aboard the Batman train. And they've even said...
They can't do that.
Former writers, former Batman writers have said, oh yeah, Batman's gay. Oh yeah, he's straight up homo. Like, they...
Who said this?
Robin,
this one
maybe.
Guy. He's a writer.
He's one guy. We're one
issue. I don't know what his name is. No, he's one of
one homoerotic issue with Batman.
Yes.
No, but I mean, I don't think...
Batman lives with his friend, with their butler.
His ward.
Yeah.
You could describe every superhero that way. They all have...
No, Superman's got a chick.
But
Spider-Man
he wears...
Got a chick.
No, they wear tights.
He's got a fortress of solitude he
could
go
everything
to.
Everything about Batman is straight fetish.
Yeah, which character of DC Comics is not gay? That would be a much more interesting question.
That is interesting.
Just turns into a big gay orgy.
Who's not? Who's the straightest DC
They're
character?
All Ace and Gary to me.
The Flash seems pretty heterosexual.
Yeah, well, he's in and out quick.
That's what we didn't realize. How about Aquaman?
Oh, come on. The guy swims with the fishes.
He's dead. He's that's.
I don't know. There's just something so gay about Aquaman. That's the. He's wet.
It's too. He's too gay to be a surprise that he's gay.
I don't know the DC pantheon that well. Who else is in there?
I pretty much named everyone I know. I mean, I doubt it's going to be Wonder Woman.
Well, maybe it would be Wonder Woman.
That seems like a safe choice.
That is a safe choice.
There's something about two superhero ladies.
It's. Well, those nerds we were just talking about, I love it. But Wonder Woman, I think it's too safe a choice. I actually think Green Lantern could be the thing. Plus, you know, he's got his whole intergalactic coalition or whatever. You know, they're all...
You know, only pretty much 10% of the comic book movie-going audience saw that movie. I think it all lines up.
I'm going to out Green Lantern right now. Green Lantern is gay.
I'm with you.
He's gay. He's the one.
I guess I'm overruled. But I'm going with Batman.
And he looks good in green.
So, here's what's going on television. Everyone is singing on television. And as we've already established on this episode, I've given up on music unless it's Regina Spektor.
Or karaoke.
Or karaoke, which isn't really music. There's a new ABC show now. Duets! Now it's like... You're going to sing, I'm Kelly Clarkson, and you're going to sing with me.
Or you get thrown to the lions.
So, we already have The Voice and American Idol. And why does America care about all this singing? Like, what is it about this?
I don't know, but NBC announced today another singing show.
Really?
That I don't remember. I should have read a little closer. But there's going to be a negotiation element where teams are going to be able to horse trade in some fashion over the singing talents of the other team. Once again, I'm being extremely vague because I didn't really read the article, but there's another singing show on its way on television.
I guarantee you the pitch for that was extremely vague, too. And here's the thing. American Idol used to be in the zeitgeist. It used to be, like, I couldn't
Well, Kelly Clarkson, who is now the, on Duets, got her start from winning American Idol.
I mean, and I knew who she was, and she's got to be one of the more successful. And some of the early American Idols, because you couldn't escape. I didn't watch the show, but you couldn't escape hearing about these people.
Carrie Underwood.
Reuben Stoddard. Clay Aiken.
These people, you couldn't. Now, apparently last week, someone named...
Daugherty. What was that guy's name?
Daugherty.
Roger.
Looks like Howie Mandel's brother.
Now, last week, and I keep up on pop culture, someone named Philip Phillips won American Idol. I had never heard. This is so, like, I guess the thing is American Idol is so, with all these shows, I'm sure people knew who this guy was. I didn't know what was going on. I just heard.
Didn't know who he was? Andrew Marchand.
And she tweeted about it, and that's how I knew that Philip Phillips won. But that what I'm saying is that used to be unavoidable. It used to be you can't avoid knowing who Philip Phillips is. Now, who's this asshole with two first names? have you ever watched any of these singing shows?
I saw American Idol years ago because I was like, what? I need to know why people are all excited about this. It's just not my thing.
I never watched the full episode.
Yeah. I get the drama of it, but... not for me.
Aren't we so oversaturated now? Like, we can't keep track of who's the winner of X Factor and Voice and...
And America's Got Talent.
I don't even know. Well, I'm about to get to that. Now, I don't even know if there is a winner or multiple. I mean, does someone just win The Voice? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand. It's always, like, a boring white guy. You notice that on American Idol?
But are they all from... I read today, yesterday, something like, why are all the winners coming from the South? I guess they get an inordinate number of Southern
winners. Or maybe they
have
a rich singing tradition in the South?
No. Here's what it is. It's that the people in the South, unlike the people here in Los Angeles or my hometown of New York, the people of the South have nothing to do, so they vote. They vote, oh, I'm going to go vote for Idol.
For Philip Phillips.
Philip Phillips. And nobody votes for the women because the guys, like a guy who might be like, oh, Catherine McPhee is really attractive. No, he's not voting because he's not watching. And the girls aren't going to vote for a girl because they're catty about this stuff. So, I got a real issue with this. Now, America's Got Talent. This seems to be another thing that it's like we could do anything. I saw a clip of a guy came on. His talent was he could get kicked in the balls a lot. Did you see this?
No, I enjoyed it when it was called The Gong Show. It had a lower budget, but it was just as entertaining.
Exactly. And
or you could also watch it on Saturday nights on Channel 34, Sábado Gigante.
Sábado Gigante.
Essentially the same show.
I mean, these people, it's just like, we got an acrobat, or we got a singer. I don't understand how they figure this shit out. And now, this season, the big deal is that Howard Stern, you know, the brash radio personality, Howard Stern, who he's on Sirius now, so nobody listens to him anymore, I guess. But Howard Stern is on the show, and I saw a clip last week, and there was this little kid, and he was singing a song, and Howard, like... I guess he gonged him out, for lack of a better word. He gonged the kid off, and the kid, this little kid, starts crying. So Howard Stern...
It's good TV.
...gets up, and Howard Stern's apologizing to the kid. And then Howard Stern, when they were there, said the kid could come back, but the network said, no, you gonged him off. So this is an issue that I have now with this trend. Howard Stern, you fucking gone soft. Yeah. You made a kid cry, and then you apologize? Fuck you. No apologies. You're on America's Got Talent. You sold out. Fuck you, Howard Stern. You're the enemy of the podcast right now. You are the enemy. Old Howard Stern would have mocked this display. And now, look at you.
I bet that little kid would have won had he been riding a mechanical dildo.
Yes.
I think then Howard would have voted
for him. And even female and a porn star, writing Mechanical Dildo. Oh. Are you a Howard Stern fan?
I like Howard. I don't have Sirius, so I'm...
So there you go. You
I
probably listened until he went on the Sirius thing, and then, like everybody else, you dropped out.
Correct.
I mean, but what do you think? I mean, am I off base in saying that, like, this seems like something that the Howard Stern of, like... private parts and stuff wouldn't have gotten involved in? Or at least he would have done it in a more subversive way somehow?
I don't know. I'm disappointed in all those people who end up on those shows. First of all, when Paula Abdul sold out, You knew that was the end. No, seriously, all these... I mean, like, Steven Tyler, I was really... I was like, I could get Britney Spears, someone like that.
Yeah, she's got enough of it. She needs it.
But that's their milieu, you know?
But Steven Tyler was always the most ambiguous of rock stars. I don't know. He struck me as hard-edged.
But they always, you know, they were like the American Rolling Stones. You know, they were supposed to have, for lack of a better word, balls, you know? And
well, they had udders. I saw it on the cover of their album.
Exactly, with the piercing, right?
Yeah. Pierced udder.
Was that the name of the album? Did you buy that
CD? No, I forget what the name of the album was.
You didn't own Pierce Thunder?
I was never a big Aerosmith fan because to me it all kind of sounded alike to me. There was crying and crazy, and it would, you know, but I liked the videos.
But there was older Aerosmith.
Yes, that was... I like some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess when they first came on my radar, it was around that
Armageddon.
Like, yeah. Well, that was all because of Run DMC. After that song, Walk This Way became big again with Run DMC. Suddenly, people were interested in these old guys.
So you know what? Good point. Everyone who's hosting or judging on any of these competitions,
except for Simon Cowell, who started it,
go fuck yourself, all of you. All of you go fuck. Steven Tyler, fuck you.
Him especially.
Yeah, Howard Stern, Steven Tyler, and we're all just, you're all done. And I mean, J-Lo. Is this a leg?
Sharon Osbourne, you sold out. Get off.
Yes, you sold out from your sellout reality show. Yeah. Fuck you, Sharon Osbourne. Hey, want to bring up one last thing before we wrap up here.
Segway King.
That's how we do it.
There was a trailer, went up last week, for Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby movie. This book that I think is semi...
One of the seminal classics of world literature, not just English literature, one of the greatest novels ever written.
It's okay.
Really?
No, I love it.
Oh, it's great.
Don't get me in a Fitzgerald fight right now.
I love the Cliff Notes.
You don't want a Fitzgerald fight with this man.
No.
But... you know, Baz Luhrmann, he did Moulin Rouge, which is a movie I actually really enjoy. I thought it was great spectacle. It sucked me in.
It's unlike any movie that I'd ever seen.
And he's given the Moulin Rouge touch to The Great Gatsby. I saw the trailer.
It's more than a touch. It's a grope. It's a two-handed grab.
It's a garish trailer. Like, it's like, I mean, I don't know.
It looks
like
a garish treatment of the book.
It's interesting. In a way... You bring up Moulin Rouge, which it had a lot of, but also look at his treatment of Romeo and Juliet, also with Leonardo DiCaprio, which was that same sort of hyper-stylized version of...
Taking all the emotions and ratcheting it up. You know what?
It becomes opera.
It does
become
opera.
That's why when I saw Great Gatsby trailer, I thought of you because I thought this is an operatic treatment.
That's what Moulin Rouge was as well. Yeah. Moulin Rouge was straight-up opera. I think Gatsby, and the English majors do their thing here for a moment, one of the reasons why the Gatsby films up to this point have not really worked is because the character of Jay Gatsby is a cipher. He's supposed to be a null in the middle of the book. We're never really supposed to know who he is. It went so far as when Fitzgerald submitted his first draft of the novel, his editor said, listen, I know what you're going for here. I know what you want to accomplish, but you need to provide some basic physical description of Jay Gatsby at some point in the book. And I know you went out of your way to not have it, but you need to just have a thumbnail sketch so that the reader has some idea of what this man looks like. And so you can't...
And he looks like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, that's the thing. When you're making a movie, you have to actualize what on the book worked otherwise. And so the only way I think around it is to take all the emotions of the story and just yank it up to 11.
Well, you mentioned like the overblown like Romeo and Juliet and stuff, but I feel like that story somehow lends itself more to that kind of treatment than The Great Gatsby. I mean, it's for a lot of reasons that you just said, Sean.
Well, with The Gatsby, not a lot happens in The Great Gatsby. They have a couple parties, they talk, there's a car crash, and then...
And giant eyes on a
spoiler alert.
Car crash.
Oh, no.
And then we beat ourselves ceaselessly against the tide.
You look at that trailer, and it looks like some amazing action thriller mystery. There is some serious... It looks like the most action-packed book. Every kid's going to go to college saying, I got to read this Great Gatsby, huh? What the hell? I have to read words? What? This isn't like the movie. I just think that what Baz Luhrmann does, and what he's, or at least what I feel like he's doing off this trailer, is he's saying, okay, there's this source material, Great Gatsby. I'm not making The Great Gatsby. I'm making something that is...
Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby.
I think so, yeah. He does stuff that's, you know, tangentially related to the source material and make something wholly new with it.
Well, from what I saw in the trailer, I mean, if you actually, if you know the story and you're watching the trailer, you could see the story in there. You have the lines from the book.
The shirts.
Yeah.
I recognize the shirt scene.
It's all the eyes of T.J. Eckelberg over the valley, over the valley. You know?
Look, if you haven't read The Great Gatsby, after this podcast is over, you should give it a read. It's a great,
phenomenal.
It's not long.
It's a very quick read, and it's one of the books that lives up to the hype. It's one of the books that they forced you to read that actually lived up to the hype.
Not like fucking Ayn Rand. Go fuck herself.
Did they force you to read?
No, but fuck Ayn Rand.
Oh,
yeah, I'm with you. I read that Fountainhead.
It was really distasteful. I was like
27 years old. Everyone's Ayn Rand.
You know
who
how
is this?
Many women I dated who was like, "You should read Atlas Shrugged." Yeah, I gave
you a
copy.
Fuck you. Yeah, you want me to act like the characters in Atlas Shrugged? Uh huh. Yeah, this is not going to be a good relationship.
So you know who the enemy of the podcast is? Every girl I ever dated who tried to get me to read Atlas Shrugged.
Now you just lost 4 listeners.
We probably have. Now I'm trying
to think. 30% of our listener pool.
I'm trying to think if any of them actually listen to this podcast.
Oh, they'll let us know. And if you've ever listened to, your ex-girlfriends?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can start rattling names.
I know some
names
that do, but I know
if others. You'd like to tell us your thoughts on Ayn Rand, email us at willshawnpodcast@gmail.com.
She's a terrible writer.
Yeah.
I was like, why
awful
is it?
And fascistic.
Absolutely.
All right.
Totally. Okay. We won't
talk about that. We gotta wrap this up. We could talk about literature that our listeners don't care about all day. But instead, we'll put this episode to bed, so to speak. Barry.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Some real interesting stuff, especially that writer's room stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I
got a lot more.
I got stories.
I got stories, yeah.
That'll be on the director's cut of this episode.
Now, let's see. What do we got here? As always, you know, like the podcast on Facebook. You can now follow the podcast on Twitter, Will Sean Podcast. Do you have anything to plug, Barry? Do you have anything upcoming? Any writing things you want to plug? Or
I will be appearing in Palm Springs at my parents' house, probably doing something in the living room in front of the couch, some kind of
watching duets,
perhaps old Steve Martin routines. Anything. It will end in applause, and I will feel validated and happy.
And how can I get
3 seconds?
Which, by the way, I is my whole summary of Ben Stiller's style. I feel like all he does is he's acting in front of his family in the living room.
He's still trying to make his dad laugh.
It's all about him. Ben, I'm sorry. I hope you keep listening.
Ben is a big listener of this. And by the way, I've already got my tickets to watch you in Palm Springs.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Next weekend.
I don't know how you score. You must know somebody.
I got some big
did
contacts.
You get... Oh, you
from
didn't
Long
get
Island,
the,
he's got a guy.
You didn't get the back... The back
door pass.
Pass.
That's the pass I want.
That's the one where my uncle is.
Are you on Twitter? Do you have a Twitter that people could follow?
I do. It's at Barry Warnick.
Why don't you spell it in case people are idiots?
Well, it's a little sign. It's a little at sign with a circle around it.
It's like a circle that ate another circle.
Yeah, because you don't. God forbid you should write the letter T. It's just got at. And then BarryWernick, not to be confused with my doppelganger, some other Barry Warnick who...
Yeah, I heard there was this other Barry Warnick, and he's, you know, he's also an asshole.
Yeah.
Maybe it's
hopefully
me.
He has a Google News alert for his name or something, and when this gets posted, it'll come up and be like, what the fuck?
Maybe he's so
we should email him.
I want to have dueling Barrys on the podcast.
The worst doppelgangers ever.
It's the worst Barry Oreo cookie you can imagine.
Sean, do that thing where you plug shit.
Well, I plug shit. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSeanDavid. You can buy my book and read it. Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS, 3 Tales on Amazon Kindle. Buy it, read it, love it, make me happy.
Now that the summer started, it's official summer reading.
It is official. It's on the list. You got Great Gatsby and you got Triumvirs. That's the summer reading.
Honestly, those are the only two books you ever need to read.
And I also have an article coming out this week on U1 Cons, YOUWONCANNES, U1 Cons. And I did an article about Fassbender, who I discussed last week, and about the Fassbender retrospective at the American Cinematheque this June. So read that and learn a little something.
And Sean and I are going to continue to contribute to this website. There's a link for it on our Facebook page. You can also find them on Twitter. And you can find me on Twitter, @TheRealWillLink. And you can listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti, reviewing movies. It's crntalk.com. And next week on the show, speaking of fine literature, we have, although she's not a writer, but we have Becca Bateau, who's a terrific actress. I've seen her in a few plays, but she does a lot of audio books. And she is the voice of the 50 Shades of Grey books. So we're going to have her on to let us know what the hell all this trend is about.
Mommy porn.
Yeah, the housewives are masturbating to. I want to get her to tell us about that. And who do we have the week after that?
Week after that, we have Shani Rotkevitz from the website rentfoodbroke.com. This is a fantastic website. Essentially, it was started a couple years ago. And the whole purpose of the site is to provide you with information and ideas for activities that you can do in Los Angeles for under $10. And it is a wealth of awesome, awesome sites and free music and comedy and concerts and museums. And if you are cheap and have no money but need to be entertained, rentfoodbroke.com. Shawnee's one of the creators of the site. She's going to talk about it. And she also is sassy, so that'll be good.
Oh, good. We're going to have 2 weeks with two sassy women. I guess I don't even know. Maybe I shouldn't have called Becca sassy. So, once again, Barry, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I would say that's that, and we're finished.
Where's my copy of The Great Gatsby?